Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, engineering and producing our program. Tom, today, Good Friday, the holiest day on the Christian calendar, Friday, March 29th, 2024. And I brought out the pink shirt today in honor of Easter. Did you notice?
I did. I noticed the pink shirt. I didn't connect it with Easter until now, though.
It's not real. I wasn't thinking
actually
about
it. Can I ask a question?
Easter. Yes.
Are we having the Easter holiday early this year?
Yes, we are having it. It's one of the earliest Easters that you can have, and that's all based on, I don't know if I'm going to get this right, something to do with the moon, or I'm not quite sure what. But
nothing to do with leap year?
No, I don't think it's
We were blaming leap year for some other thing last month.
Yeah,
Anyway.
All right.
Spring, I think. The spring equinox or something.
That was it. The spring equinox. All right. The Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. We have now 5 radio stations under one roof. Part of the growing Bustos media presence here in Tucson. This station is 1030 KVOI, The Voice, Tucson's only source for live local news and talk. We're in our 14th year with our radio show and our 36th year here in Tucson broadcasting. We have our worldwide live listening and podcast going back to when we started the radio show in January of 2011. So that's 13 years of programs that are all archived, very easy to use. The Buckmaster Show live line for our telephone interviews presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our media partners, TucsonSentinel.com, Dylan Smith and his team.
Yeah.
Take one for the team. Jim Nintzel is here, and he's now part of the team. And Jim is the political reporter, political specialist for TucsonSentinel.com. And half of his salary, I believe, is funded by
Report for America.
I was just going to say Report America, but it's Report for America.
Yes, yes. And the rest of it's from folks in the community. So
yeah, I mean, because Tucson Sentinel is a nonprofit that is, there's not a subscription. I mean, you can get it for free, but what keeps it going are the donations.
The support from our community. I have to give Dylan Smith and such credit for having built this thing up over 13 years.
Yeah.
And you know, we're always happy to receive a little extra support, so consider that.
Well, I've thrown a few bucks your way.
Well, we really do appreciate everything from everybody.
The Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, Dan Shear and his organization, Dan has been so darn busy. He's involved with the grand jury. And yeah, so we hope to get him back on the program after his jury duty. I think it could go into June, he was telling me. Anyway.
I hadn't heard about that.
Yeah, our Friday Focus interview is with State Representative Nancy Gutierrez. Nancy, a Democrat representing the 18th, District 18, which covers, I'm in your district, Nancy. It covers the foothills, Marana, and part of Oro Valley, or no?
A little bit of Oro Valley, a little bit of Marana, and then down east. So
a little
Country
bit east.
Club East, down to about 22nd and
to Houghton, that area?
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm, yep.
Or as some say, Houghton.
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 I understand is a pronunciation occasionally.
Yeah. All right. Representative Gutierrez was first elected to her current 2-year term in November of 2022. She is a yoga instructor at Tucson High and a former math teacher, and she's the current minority whip in the Arizona House of Representatives. So she's in a leadership role, and I understand the minority whip would be kind of among the top three, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Democratic leaders
yes.
in the Arizona House. Well, it's great to have you on the program.
It's great to be here. Thanks.
How are we doing with this legislature? We're into almost April, and there's no budget. I mean, that's not that unusual, but how would you characterize this year compared to your first year?
It's been a bumpy ride, I would say. We've had a lot of upheaval in my own membership this session, but we have come together quite well as a caucus, which has been exciting to see. And, you know, we are definitely going to pass a budget earlier than we did last year, which was July 31st. That was my first day back to teaching. So last day at the legislature, first day of teaching was the same day. We will not do that again.
And you got into politics because of the Red for Ed movement. It definitely resonated with you, right?
It did. I was one of those people holding signs out on Broadway mm-hmm. and then walking up to the Capitol. Now when I sit in the governor's office and I look out, that's what I remember as all of that red stream coming towards, you know, the Capitol. That and, you know, our 2016 election really started me going down the path of maybe getting into politics.
Becoming an activist.
Absolutely.
But has the education was such a forefront issue a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. Did the interest kind of wane, or where are we still very much? I mean,
no.
I know you're very concerned with it.
Very concerned.
What about your fellow colleagues in the legislature?
Yeah, I think education is at the top of most of our lists because of the vouchers that we're seeing now and just a continual lack of respect for our public schools and public school teachers and public school students, for that matter. It is at the forefront of most of our minds.
All right, let's bring Jim Nitzel into the conversation.
Do you think that as long as we're talking about the education and political
sure.
support, do you think that the COVID shutdowns really diminished the public support that you were seeing for education?
That's a great question.
That?
I mean, it's funny because at the beginning of the pandemic, we were the heroes, right? Everybody was so thrilled that we had figured out how to get school online and we were keeping kids interested and you know, keeping them educated. And then the longer it went on, the less support we had. And now everybody kind of talks about that time as like, oh, well, you weren't really teaching. You were just at home for a year and a half. And I can assure you that I was home and I was teaching yoga in my living room. And, you know, everybody had to have their cameras on. And it was, you know, we got to know each other's families and dogs and all of that. Yeah. And it was quite a scene. But we were doing that. I was actually teaching online on January 6th.
Hmm. Yeah.
And that was an interesting time to teach, too.
It does seem as though some of the political momentum you had was really thrown off by
yes.
the frustration I think a lot of folks had as the closures continued.
For sure. Yes. As the closures continued, yes. Our support waned. I don't know how we could have done things differently because people were dying and going back. Some schools went back early, but then they found out that was difficult to maintain. Tucson High, Tucson Unified went back late. It was after spring break.
You know, a full year,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, it was a full year. And we had a half, you know, some kids were online, some kids were in session. So we did in session in the morning and then we taught our online students in the afternoon. So we were teaching double. And masks were required. And it really, honestly, it took probably another year for students to come back and remember how to interact with each other, talk to each other, participate in the classes like they used to. So it was really difficult time to be a teacher, a student, just a citizen then.
Everybody's all in on the Republican side, and Tom Horn, of course, is all in with vouchers. And one thing that I wonder about and I question, doesn't seem to be accountability for the vouchers.
There is no
First of all, the question, can Arizona afford to keep giving more money for school vouchers? And then what about accountability?
Yeah, we cannot afford it. I mean, it's at $1 billion of unbudgeted money at this point, and they just want to keep growing that. Well, where will that money come from? I mean, right now it's coming from the general fund. We are in a deficit. So we cannot afford it. And there is no accountability. I mean, Tom Horn just had an opportunity in the parent handbook to put some accountability in. And that's what people were, ESA parents were even asking for. And Senator Hoffman came in and said, no, don't do that. So he didn't. So they gave up any accountability they could have put in.
Speaking of Senator Hoffman, he does seem concerned about accountability for the Arizona School for the Deaf and Blind.
Yes.
And you're in the House, not the Senate, which is where it seems like the biggest holdup on this is going on. But it seems as though there's a real skepticism mm-hmm. towards the School for the Deaf and Blind up there. And I'm wondering about your thoughts on what's going on there.
Yeah, we saw their sunset review last session in the House Education Committee. And we unanimously went forward with an 8-year continuation. You know, they had a few things that they were working on, but they had a plan to work on everything that the sunset process had had an issue with. And we passed it. I mean, it was easy. And then the Senate got a hold of it, and Senator Hoffman and Senator Wadsack have some sort of vendetta against this school. And I don't know why, but they are determined to not continue it. And I know that the School of Deaf, the Arizona School for the Deaf and Blind, does incredible work, and they do it in the entire state. They bus kids from every part of the state there, which is very expensive. You know, some of their kids have extra special needs. I don't know why they're, I think, bullying this school of special needs students.
And Senator Wadsack has suggested that maybe their mission should be extended to cover more special education, special needs kids. And I'm wondering about your thoughts on that.
No, they should not. I completely disagree, because serving, you know, deaf and blind students is very different than serving students with emotional disabilities or it's completely different. They are experts at what they do. And public schools serve students with disabilities, students on the, you know, who need that. So I don't know why a specialized school would need to expand when public schools serve special needs students.
No, you're saying it's not their lane.
It isn't their lane, and it shouldn't have to be. I mean, they do a great job at what they do. Leave them alone.
Is the school in danger of maybe shutting down without state support?
Well, they would definitely shut down without state support, yes. So if they don't get continued past that 2 years, they would have to shut down. There's no way that they could self-fund.
And does it create challenges in terms of long-term contracts?
It absolutely does.
Shorter
teachers.
Timelines?
I mean, no teacher wants to get hired for a year. And, you know, as teachers, we appreciate knowing where we're going to be teaching. You make connections with the families, you make connections with the students, and it's detrimental every way around. It's just a terrible, terrible thing that they're doing.
Then there's these issues that are being efforts to refer them directly to the voters. Republicans kind of trying to do an end run around what they believe would be the governor's veto, and taking some of these issues directly to the voters. I'm thinking of this latest one about gas stoves, using natural gas and letting voters decide whether that should be put into the Constitution, that everyone would always be allowed, I guess, forever to use a gas stove.
You can't make it up. They are going around the governor because they know these are things that she's vetoed in the past and she would continue to veto. There's, I can't remember the number, I could look it up, but there's an initiative going to the ballot that would give life sentences for anyone found guilty of sex trafficking. Even if they were tried as an adult, but they were actually a minor. So this could be a 15-year-old kid who's convicted of sex trafficking being in in prison for the rest of their lives. And it also, what we found, actually would give perhaps victims of being sex trafficked themselves, they're often forced to then sex traffic others, and it would put them in prison for life. And so the Democrats, myself, I mean, I proposed an amendment, talked to them beforehand. It was a Bliss bill about, you know, pointing out these two things. Do you realize that this is for minors? Do you realize that this could put victims in jail for their life? And they just said, well, you have to be tried as an adult, so they're adults, and a victim could ask for a pardon from the governor. So the bill's fine. And that's right. Going to our voters.
We are at break time, but I don't want to keep this caller over through the break. So, Nancy, if you would slip on your headset, sure. We can take a listen to caller Paul, who called us on line one on the live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Go ahead, Paul. You're with Nancy Gutierrez.
Yes, my wife's a retired teacher. She asked me to call you, and she's wondering why the Democrats never mentioned the fact that the state pays, I think she said, $11,000 or $12,000 per student in public schools. And when a person puts their kids into a private school, they're only allowed to charge $7,000, I believe, and it just takes away the $11,000 that the state's paying. So aren't we saving $5,000 for each student that goes to a private school? And perhaps the reason the Democrats are against that is because it would possibly cut down on the number of public school teachers.
All right, let's let Nancy Gutierrez respond to that. Thank you, Paul.
Sure. Thank you, Paul, for that question. I've heard this question many times, and the truth is that some of that money that is supposedly being paid to per public school student is not state funded. That's coming from the federal government. So that does not come out of our general fund. We are 48th in the nation for what we spend per pupil, which is under $7,000. And private school ESA voucher students can get up to $40,000 depending on the child. So it's not true that they only get $7,000 per student. We are actually spending more in ESA vouchers than we are per pupil in public schools.
All right, let's take a break right here. It is our Friday Focus interview with the Arizona House of Representatives Minority Whip, Representative Nancy Gutierrez of Tucson. Jim Nintzel's here from TucsonSentinel.com. And Jim and Nancy, I want to talk about my favorite bakery, Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, an added enhancement. Jim, I think you may have heard about this.
They've got booze.
Yeah. Yes. The team applied for a liquor license, and they were granted that. So right now, if you feel like you'd like a beer with lunch.
Mimosa with your Kringle.
Yeah, you can certainly do the mimosa, which is orange juice and champagne. That's now readily available for you. They've got actually a growing selection of wines now at Mona's. So, yeah.
I'd say a mimosa and a Kringle is going to do wonders for your blood sugar.
And they are pouring imported and domestic beers. They're doing Peroni on the Italian beer, and I think Firestone out of Pasas Robles, California, is one of their domestic beers. So they're good beers. All right, monasdanishbakery.com is their website. And again, they're at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. The Buckmaster Show for Friday continues right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Our Friday Focus interview today, State Representative Nancy Gutierrez, who is the Arizona House of Representatives Minority Whip. And for those not familiar with the Minority Whip, it is a leadership position, one of the three top leadership roles for the Democratic side in the Arizona House of Representatives. Jim Nintzel is with me, political writer for TucsonSentinel.com. And Jim, why don't you start off the questioning for segment number two?
Yeah, absolutely. The governor vetoed a bill that folks said would help with affordable housing recently, saying that I think it was too much of an experiment in the way that it removed zoning powers away from local governments. Your thoughts on that veto and also the just the strategies for improving our affordable housing in Arizona?
Sure. We definitely need to have more affordable housing in Arizona. That particular veto, I know that the governor had heard from pretty much every single mayor in the state asking her to veto it, along with the League of Cities and Towns, because it would have made Arizona like the most progressive state in the entire country for housing, which isn't a bad thing necessarily, but I think you do need more buy-in from the cities and towns and mayors if you want to go there, if you want to be that bold. And she didn't. You know, they were very vocal in their lack of support for that bill. We do still have some housing bills coming forward, but, you know, some of the immediate things we could do, and my colleagues like Representative Schwiebert had bills to just cap how much landlords could raise the rent every year. And those are never even seen because the Republicans won't give them a hearing. So that's the kind of thing that could really help people right now who are getting priced out of their homes. I was just told that it's the group of people who are most becoming houseless are women 65 and over. And that's because they have a fixed income probably, and their rent just keeps skyrocketing. So I think Tucson has been a leader in the state because we already have the ADU availability. And I think our, you know, our city and council have really worked to find some solutions for affordable housing, but especially with wraparound services. So it's really the state legislature is trying to make the city of Phoenix be as responsible as the city of Tucson. But when you do that, you're affecting the entire state. So I'm hopeful, like people like Senator Ana Hernandez, I'm hopeful that she gets on the Phoenix City Council. She's running for it, and she can be the person there to help Phoenix kind of keep up with the times and do some good for their people.
What are your thoughts about the whole notion of saying, hey, cities can't restrict through zoning how many units can be on a property? Or
yeah, that? I, you know, I mean, it's definitely not my area of expertise, but I do know that we had the firefighters coming in saying, well, that's not necessarily the best way to do it based on, well, water consumption, number one. You know, our water, we have a drought, we have a water issue. So if your houses were zoned for just one single family use, obviously if you put many more little properties, you're using a lot more water than you had said that you had. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I know that the firefighters union was very opposed to that bill because of safety issues and how would they know zoning wise what to plan for? It's so complicated, but we do need to do something. We need to have the stakeholders really keep coming back together and see what we can work out with the cities and the towns.
The money picture is going to be very interesting this year. Last year, the budget was like the top priority early on in the session. Now it will be the last thing that the legislature yes. does. And right now, there's really nothing for the lawmakers. Kind of a recess is even being planned
yes.
or talked about for a couple of weeks or a week until the budget is sorted out and the April numbers come in, the revenue numbers. We may be in a little bit of a budget crunch here.
We will have to do some number crunching for sure. We are hoping that those April numbers look a little better than the January numbers. March's numbers looked a little better, so that will mean fewer cuts to essential services. But also, we're waiting to see if these bills pass that continue agencies, because the Senate has been holding up these agency continuations, and it's very difficult to budget for an agency that you don't know that you'll have. So that's been an issue, and I think perhaps the break, I mean, it's the break is from the Republicans. They're the ones that get to say when we come to work and when we don't. But maybe it's going to put some pressure on the Senate to pass those agency continuations so we can know how to budget.
Because some agencies, we don't even know if they're going to exist.
Correct.
And agency directors' appointments have been held up.
They have been held.
I had Will Humble, the former Arizona health director, on the show yesterday, and he told me there's an acting, told our listeners there's been an acting director, but it's not just that department. There are several of these that have been held up.
Yes.
And they're just, we don't know where they're going.
We don't. And so now they have the title of executive director instead of, you know, director.
Yeah.
But and I think there are more that haven't been approved mm-hmm. than actually have. And that's mm-hmm. no way to run a state. Again, they're just going around the governor. She absolutely put well-qualified people in those positions that they did not pass, like, you know, Martin Quesada. He was excellent for that position, and it was very politically motivated, and it's just not responsible, not a responsible way to run our state.
Or our health director now here in Pima County.
Exactly right. She was, I mean, I was thrilled when she was nominated, and they wouldn't consider it. I thought they were very unprofessional to her, honestly.
Jim Nentzel.
So, you know, the budget, obviously, negotiations, if they're happening, are well behind the scenes. But what are your priorities to see in the budget?
Well, I would like to see some accountability for those ESA voucher dollars. That didn't happen in last year's budget, which is partly why I was a no on the budget. They won't let us put any parameters through legislation. So we are left with being able to put some parameters in during the budget process. I'm not necessarily hopeful that that's going to happen, but I'm going to fight for that because that's just it's like a sieve draining our budget. public education, I know there won't be raises in our spending, but I don't want any cuts to public education funding. And then absolutely we want to hold on to our housing budget that, we did get 40 million, was it? No, 400 million in our housing budget for homeless and housing. We need to hold on to that. And then we also just need to make sure that those agencies have what they need. And that's really the executive budget. Katie Hobbs put out her budget at the beginning of January, and that's what I would like to see, all of those projects funded as they are. She pulled back some of the pork that we saw added to it last session, so that was great, a good way to save money, and that's the budget that I would like to see move forward.
How much is the loss of the federal dollars that came through COVID relief affecting where we're at?
That's absolutely going to affect us in a small budget way, but a huge personal way. The COVID money dollars that have allowed all reduced lunch kids to just have free lunch, that's going to be gone. Kathy Hoffman made sure that was one of her last things she did as superintendent of public instruction. So it's only $4.5 million to continue that, but it's definitely something I want to see. To qualify for free lunch, a family of four has to make under $39,000 a year. Mm. And then to qualify for reduced lunch, it's a family of four under $55,000 a year. And I think we can all agree that if you're making even $65,000 a year, you are going to struggle to pay for your kids' lunches or pay for food to feed your children. And that's been one of my priorities since I got into the legislature. I would love to see everyone eat breakfast and lunch. Just, we did that over COVID time when we came back to school. Everyone ate, regardless of whether they could pay or not. And I saw a huge increase in the amount of kids that were eating at lunch. And therefore, we saw it just better attendance, better sleep, better nutrition. So that's a priority for me in the budget. Well, I'm going to cross my fingers on that one.
It just feels like this could be one of those years, Jim, where they go right up until where they stop the clock on June 30th. We're going to take a pause, it looks like, with the legislature here for a couple of weeks. This could go all the way into the end of June.
Well, the one thing...
Well, that is an election year.
That's it. That's it. So, that's, and our Speaker of the House is running for for Congress. So... that is something that I'm hopeful that will force them to the table.
Mm-hmm. The governor is there all year.
She is there all year. Exactly right. Yes. Yes. Well, and many of us have jobs that, we need to get back to because that $24,000 a year doesn't go very far. So many of us have summer jobs and jobs back in the fall that we can't be waiting for them to figure out the budget.
Speaking of food and nutrition, the legislature passed some restrictions on the SNAP dollars, the supplemental nutrition dollars that I think people used to know as food stamps.
Mm-hmm.
And they said they passed some legislation with work requirements, and I think the governor's expected to veto this legislation. But your thoughts on that legislation?
Yes, I was sitting on that committee. I was subbing for the health committee because we had one of our members leave when that was going through. And these are just extra measures. We already have requirements in there about working and about looking for work. And it's just put in there to humiliate people. It truly is. People need help putting food on their tables. All of the folks who... supplement food stamps, like the food banks and the churches, said, please do not put these measures in. People need help, and they're not being helped with even the benefits that you have now. Why would you put more parameters on that? So it's a lot of just shame and a lot of wanting to push people down even further who are just having a difficult time. And Arizona is already one of the states with the highest number of regulations on food stamps, that kind of, you know, assistance. And so for us to make it harder for people to feed their children is really disgusting.
How much of it, those SNAP dollars, are coming from the federal government versus the state?
The federal government matches our dollars, and we would be in jeopardy of losing some federal funding if we, you know, put too many parameters or aren't helping enough. So yeah, why would we give back federal dollars? It just doesn't make any sense.
Jim, I think you might have anything more, or we're going to have to wrap it up.
Okay. I've got plenty more.
But I know ahead. You do. I knew. Nancy Gutierrez, thank you so much, Nancy.
Thank you.
Nancy Gutierrez, state representative, first elected, and I assume you're standing for re-election?
Yes, yeah. I turned in my signatures last week.
There you go. Democrat representing District 18, and she is the current minority whip in the Arizona House of Representatives. We thank her for coming into the studio. Thank you very much.
Pleasure's mine.
All right, we'll take a break right here. I've got a few things to talk about with Jim Nintzel right after this break.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Our thanks to State Representative Nancy Gutierrez for coming in studio today with us for our Friday Focus interview. Jim Nintzel is here, political writer, reporter for the online news service, TucsonSentinel.com. So we have the deadline coming up. But before we talk about the candidates and the upcoming races, probably the most pressing priority facing Pima County and the city of Tucson, too, to a certain extent. There'd been all this concern, Jim, about what are referred to as street releases of migrants. But there are last-minute dollars coming in.
Yeah, and this is such a complicated issue, and I think there are elements of it that people are not clear on, and I think it grows out of what's happened at the border in recent years, where people are no longer trying to get into the country in order to, you know, land a construction job. They're coming into the country because they're fleeing persecution or whatever in their home countries and making this trip. So you're seeing people from many more countries than Latin America. And when they come across the border, they're no longer trying to sneak in. They're surrendering to the authorities in order to get into this asylum process. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. So they surrender to the authorities. The authorities process them. They're now in the country legally. These folks are not in here illegally, and they don't want to stay in Tucson. They want to travel to some place where they have family and friends or some kind of community that's going to take them in under this asylum thing and then have their asylum cases processed and whatnot. So now you have all these folks who are here legally, but they need to go somewhere. And this has been a gradual thing. Originally, it was Steve Kosachik's office in Ward 6 working with Catholic Community Services to establish this center at the Benedictine Monastery. You may have remembered when that was going on.
Yeah,
eventually,
sure.
The county got involved, opened up their juvenile detention center, and folks started operating out of there. And it became what the county says is $1 million a week operation, but it prevents folks from just being released by the Border Patrol and not know what's next. Where are they supposed to go? Where's the bus station? Where's the airport? All that. This is like a way station for folks to stay in, and it prevents the chaos of having folks wandering the streets not knowing where they're supposed to go. You can say, well, the asylum thing is messed up and we should change that so that we don't have this same kind of influx, and that's a fair argument, but you know, that was something that was supposed to be addressed in the comprehensive bill that the Congress rejected even discussing. So anyway, so the county finally has the money was running out for the county, and they led the Congress did pass something, and they did say, okay, you can have $12 million, but that's, you know, according to the county, 3 months worth of services at Casa Salinas. And I think it's, I don't think it's enough to sustain it. And you're dealing with a group with a lot of volunteers, and you're just, when you wind something like that down, it's that much more expensive to try to get it back up and running. There's a lot of hard work that has to be done by folks in terms of contracts and recruiting people to help and all the rest of that.
So they were laying people off and in anticipation that there wouldn't be money.
They were winding the whole thing down and saying, we're not going to be doing this anymore. And you know, thankfully, it's going to continue to happen. But, 3 months is not really, that's a Band-Aid on a pretty severe problem. And so we'll see if more money comes at the end of that 3 months.
We'll know Monday who's in and who's not when it comes to local races. What's your take overall?
You know, I think we've got some pretty exciting races brewing here in Arizona. Certainly our Congressional District 6 race with freshman Congressman Juan Ciscomani, a Republican, facing a potential of 2 rematches. There's Kathleen Wynne, who used to have a show on
this
station, who ran against him last time and mm-hmm. wants to run against him again. She's out collecting her signatures. Mm-hmm. And then if he gets through that primary, he'll have to face Kirsten Engel, who also ran against him last time and only lost by a very narrow margin. This is one of the most competitive districts in the country, and so we'll have a lot of attention paid to that. I think the District 3 seat on the Pima County Board of Supervisors, Sharon Bronson, retired after nearly a quarter century in mm-hmm. that slot.
Very competitive.
I think you've got, it's rare that we see it open
3 or 4 Democrats, right?
4 Democrats, I think we're all looking for that. It's a Democratic-leaning district. There's a lot of independents. Mm-hmm. Conceivably, it could be a swing district, but I think it certainly leans Democratic. Mm-hmm. Janet Wittenbrocker, who ran for mayor in the city of Tucson last year, is the Republican in that race.
And Steve Christie might have competition. There may be a Democrat in his race.
Yeah, he was cruising along with no opposition at all till the end of February. And then on March 1st, Vanessa Bechtol, a Democrat who has worked in tourism issues around town, jumped into that race. You know, that's also a race where Republicans have a significant voter registration advantage, but the Democrats have some sense that they have a shot at that. And Steve also picked up a potential Republican challenger around mid-March, school board member in the Vail School District, the president of the board there, Callie Tippett, announced that she wanted to run. So we'll see who has their signatures on Monday. Some pretty interesting legislative races, particularly in Legislative District 17. This is that gerrymandered district that includes kind of Pinal County and Oro Valley, Marana, and then picks up the east side of Tucson. Had a lot of people scratching their heads over how this was drawn, but it was drawn, I think, to ensure some Republican representation down here. Justine Wadsack, the senator there, has been tagged as an extremist by a lot of folks. And this district, even though it leans pretty heavily Republican, did support Katie Hobbs. It did support Mark Kelly, and it did support Andrew Infantes, all Democrats, in the 2022 election. So Democrats feel like it's a district where if the Republican candidate is too extreme, they certainly have a shot. And they have recruited a guy named John McClain, who was an executive in a Defense Department contracting group, an engineer, really smart guy, probably fits the profile of that district pretty well. So I think Justine Wadsack has a real race on her hands.
Okay, well, we have to wrap it up. But there are a bunch of candidates, too, going against Chris Nanos for sheriff. Huh?
Yes, and they're all former, almost all former deputies. He's got
How many candidates do you think? We'll see who gets signatures.
I think you'll see Sandy Rosenthal file in the Democratic primary to run against him, and then he's got three former deputies looking to run on the Republican side, and we'll see who comes out of that race.
Okay, Jim Nitzel, always a pleasure. We'll look for your work at TucsonSentinel.com. Thanks, Jim.
Always a pleasure.
Dan Gibson's coming up next with our Weekend Watch feature. That is right after we take a break.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Away we go. It is time to stir it up. Weekend Watch is presented by our friends over in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Only about a three-hour drive. Depending on where you are in the Tucson Valley, not a bad drive at all over to a beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment. And we're talking about Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. There is so much to do over there. Lot of outdoor activities. The Gila National Wilderness is there. The world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument, if you're looking for indoor activities. The Western New Mexico University Museum has the finest collection of Mimbrace pottery in the world, really beautifully displayed there at Western New Mexico. So I suggest, before you take the road trip, which I hope you'll do, check out their website, southwestnewmexico.org, for what to do, where to stay, and some great places to eat as well. All right, Weekend Watch with Dan Gibson is now ready to go, and he is on our live line. Hey, Dan, how are you?
I'm good. Excited to go see Blues Dog at the at Whiskey Creek Zocalo in Silver City, New Mexico this Saturday.
Wow.
They're a high-energy electric blues band. Just want to throw that out there if people are looking to make plans Silver City tomorrow.
They have become somewhat of a little blues mecca. They've had the Blues Festival over the Memorial Day weekend, and kind of a happening blues place.
Yeah, they've got the Whiskey Creek Zocalo, that bar, restaurant bar, has solid music basically all the time. They've got a Appalachian country artist on Wednesday the 3rd. They've got, I think, something tonight too. Yeah, so yeah, I go to visit, if you go to visit silvercity.org, they've got a great calendar of all the things that are happening there as well. So
plenty of
ways to get great information about Silver City.
Great. And our friends at Silver City.
My general gig is to talk about Tucson, so I can do that too.
Yeah, okay. Well, we're ready now for the Tucson, but I do, and our friends in Silver City do appreciate that mention. Go ahead.
All right. Well, you know, Afrobeat music, popular music from like Nigeria and Ghana area, having really a big moment. Tyla had a big hit on American radio recently. So there is a Afrobeat experience brunch happening tomorrow from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. at on the rooftop of Playground. Should be a nice day for it. They have a DJ, DJ V. He's the Arizona Giant, I hear. But just to, in case you want to make sure, if you're heading over there, the dress code is considered classy. So show up dressed up, ready to go, and listen to some African pop jams. It sounds like it's solid time to me, by all means.
I like Afro pop, Sweto Jive, and on it goes.
Yeah, exactly. Should be a good time. I'll see you there. We'll hang out. It'll be great. I'll buy
first
drinks on me.
Okay.
Also, speaking of drinks, tomorrow from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m., it is the Westbound Wine Walk. They do a really great job of this over at Westbound at the MSA Annex. It's a great wine event, so you walk around the Annex and different wineries are there. This time it's focusing on wines of the Southwest. Tickets are $55 if you buy them in advance, but you'll be able to sample 15 wines from Arizona and Mexico. Also live music from Erica and Nico. Don't know who they are, but I'm sure it's great. And raffles as well. And it should be, you could also just stop by Westbound and have a drink as well, but if you want to do the wine event, it is an extra charge. And there's two entry times, 4 p.m. or 5 p.m., same wines for both of them.
10 years ago, if you said wines of the Southwest, people would go, what? Boy, has that
taken
off.
Exactly. And it's gotten almost so much better. There's so many options, and people at Westbound do a great job of curating them as well. So I'm sure across the board, excellent wines to try out.
All right, Dan Gibson. Of course, it's Easter. Do you have a quick Easter one or no?
I hadn't really thought about it. I kind of forgot about Easter, to be honest. That's on me. I'm a bad Protestant this year. I totally swept my mind. I was getting excited for a Filipino-American Chamber of Commerce all-you-can-eat event at Nick Sari's store. But that's what I'm going to be doing for Easter.
And where,
Unlimited Lumpia, count me in.
Where is that event that you just brought up?
29th Street and Craycroft. Nick Sari Store is a great outlet for all your Filipino grocery needs, but they're having this great event. It's $20 if you're over 18, 10 from 6 to 17-year-old, 3 for 5 and under.
Okay.
And it does go to raise money for the Filipino Chamber of Commerce.
Happy Easter. Great information, Dan Gibson. Thank you.
My pleasure.
The Buckmaster Show, a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, wholly responsible for the content of the program. Thanks to Tom Fairbanks and the entire team here at KVOI and Bustos Media. Have a great Easter weekend.